the most popular and the one we think of mostly, but parables take many forms in the Bible. We're going to list some of those this morning before we begin with the parable we're going to talk about. One type of parable that is in the Bible is called a simile. A simile is a word my high school English teacher taught me, and it means a stated likeness. And this is an example of a parable like this is in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, where it says, "Be ye wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Often a simile or a simile will include words like or as. It will be comparing one thing to another. And that is a simile. I believe that is a parable. And another type of parable we have in the Bible is an implied likeness. My high school English teacher told me that's a metaphor. Such as John chapter 10, verse 7, when it says, "I am the door of the sheep." Certainly not a literal expression. I'm a door of the sheep, an implied likeness, a metaphor. And the next type of parable we have in the Bible is, she said, was called a similitude. That's a big word. And it's based on a teaching on what is generally done than what someone did specifically. And over in Matthew chapter 13 is an example of this type of parable. Matthew chapter 13, verse 33, he told them still another parable. "The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into a large amount of flour until it worked through all the dough." It's not about specific people. It's a general item that someone generally would have done. She said that's called a similitude. And the next one that we are going to talk about is the one we all are familiar with the most, and that's the story parable. And that's the one that gets all the press. A story parable teaching based on what someone actually did or a specific event that may have occurred, such as Matthew chapter 13, the parable of the tares, or the one we're going to talk about today in Mark chapter 4, the parable of the sower of the soils. These are both story parables, we will call them. And then we have things like Mark chapter 7. And let's turn there. Mark chapter 7, we have this type of parable, which Mark chapter 7, verse 15, when Jesus says, "Nothing outside a man can make him unclean by going into him. Rather, it's what comes out of a man that makes him unclean." And there's some debate on whether this should be called a parable or not. This might be what's called, what we call a riddle, even. But it's not. It's figurative language in some way. So, how do you define a parable? What is the definition of a parable? How do you decide in the Bible what's a parable and what's not? Well, I've got a definition here for you to consider. It takes many forms, but we could call a parable a figurative saying. But then we would have to include all the stuff that's in Revelation as parables, and we don't want to really do that. So we have to make it a little bit narrower. So what the definition I have come up with by consulting sources and modifying it to something I like is that a parable is a figurative saying or story that uses the natural world to teach or explain a moral or spiritual truth. That's what I would call a parable. And that's why all of these things that we talked about in the first part, all the simile, the metaphor, the similitude, all these, in my mind, are parables because they are figurative sayings or stories that use the natural world, which that would exclude all the stuff in Revelation that's outside the natural world, to teach or explain a moral or spiritual truth. And that is the point of a parable, is to teach or explain a moral or spiritual truth. Some people will try to limit parables to just the story parables, but the Bible actually refers to some of these others as parables. So we have to include those also. Well, that's a brief review on parables in general. Today we're going to be in Mark chapter 4, mostly to talk about this parable of the sower, as it's been called through the generations. But oftentimes nowadays people call it the parable of the soils, because that's really more of the focus of the parable is the soils, not the man sowing. As we know, Jesus taught in many ways, and one of the identifying ways that he taught is with parables. He taught with parables a lot. Sometimes after he gave a parable, he would give the meaning immediately. Sometimes he would give the meaning later on to his disciples or some group of people. And sometimes he didn't give the meaning at all. Those that he didn't give the meaning at all are the ones that we have to struggle with to understand, because it's figurative language. And so what does he mean by some illustration? That is debatable. So the parable that we're going to be discussing today in Mark chapter 4 is one of the most well-known parables in the Bible. Kids learn about it in their kids' Bible classes. And like I said, it probably should be called the parable of the four soils, or the parable of the soils, because that is the focus of the parable. Jesus told, when Jesus was teaching, he got different reactions from different people, of course. And that's really what this parable is about, is the reactions that people, their reactions to the gospel, the parable of the soils. And, you know, this, we don't always think about it this way, but when we read this parable and others, oftentimes we are thinking about other people. We think about somebody we might try to teach the gospel to. But we need to think about, and I'm going to try to direct us in that way this morning, to think about how this parable applies to us. How do we receive the gospel? And, you know, sometimes we may receive the gospel in one way that the parable illustrates, and sometimes we may receive it in another, because we are not always the same. All right, so let's read here in Mark chapter 4 and read the parable 1 through 9. Mark chapter 4, 1 through 9. Again, Jesus began to teach by the lake. The crowd that gathered around him was so large that he got into a boat and sat in and out on the lake, while all the people were along the shore at the water's edge. He taught them many things by parables, and in his teaching said. So, one thing I want to point out here is we only have this one parable. He taught many things. And we don't have, it would be interesting to know what percentage of the teachings of Christ we have, but we do know we don't have it all. He taught many things. But we have this one for us. Verse 3. Listen, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants so that they did not bear grain. Still other seed fell on good soil. It came up, grew, and produced a crop, multiplying 30, 60, or even 100 times. Then Jesus said, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Well, the Messiah, the Son of God, the Son of David, just gave us a lesson from Ag Class 101. That's what he did. He just told those people that were farmers, if you plant your seed in good ground, you'll get a better crop. You know, they knew that. They knew every word he said was true. Now, what was the meaning? I suspect they looked at each other and said, "What is he talking about?" Just like we would. If we would have been there that day and we would have heard that story, we would have said, "Right, Jesus, if you plant your seed in good soil, it grows better. We know that. Okay, help us out here. What else you got?" That would have been the response we'd have had. Because they didn't understand that parable. And we wouldn't have either. Without the explanation, we might still be trying to figure out what he's talking about. Because in this case, and in many cases, the meaning of the parable is not clear. Neither would it be here. And personally, the problem I have is I don't understand figurative language in general. Poems, songs, all of literature, all of that kind of stuff. If it's not direct, I'm just lost. And so that makes understanding parables hard for me personally. Poets, songwriters say one thing and they mean something else. That makes it difficult. My high school English teacher, which I've referred to a couple times already, she used to quote this song or this poem oftentimes in making some kind of teaching us something about poetry or rhythm and meter and all those kind of things. And that was, she would say, "My love is like a red, red rose," which is a quote from a famous poem or song or something. You know, she used that phrase, "My love is like a red rose," to teach us things about literature. I didn't know then what it actually meant, "My love is like a red rose," and I still don't know. Because if somebody tells me, "My love is like a red, red rose," I think your love is like a red flower with a thorny stem. That's all I get out of it. Because that's not the way my brain works. You may know, and you can tell me later what it means, but I don't know. Well, this language in this parable is also figurative. He said something to mean something else. And without the explanation, we would be lost. But fortunately for us, the disciples that day didn't know either. And so later on they ask him, "Jesus, what does this mean?" Well, and down in verse 13, Jesus begins to answer their question. And in a way, I feel sorry for these disciples. Because Jesus said to them, "Don't you understand this parable? How then will you understand any parable?" Well, that would have been pretty humbling. He expected them to understand. That means he would expect us to understand. I feel sorry for them, because what could they say? "Well, you know, Jesus, help us out with this one, we'll get the next one." They didn't understand. We wouldn't need it. Figurative language is difficult to understand. Well, in verse 14, he begins the explanation of the parable, and it's really interesting in verse 14 is that he uses part of the figurative language in the explanation of the parable. He says in verse 14, "The farmer sows the word." Well, we still got the farmer involved in the explanation. He's really not even talking about a farmer, right? He's talking about a teacher, anybody, a Christian, teaching someone the truth. But yet in the explanation, he continues to use the illustration of the farmer. The farmer sows the word. The word is what we're talking about here, is the seed. The word is the seed. In verse 15, he says, "Some people are like seed along the path where the word is sown. As soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes away the word that was sown in them." Well, we have the beginning of the explanation. Those who have the seed taken from their hearts by Satan. Matthew's account says it's because they don't understand. They don't understand, and so it's taken away. Satan contributes to their lack of understanding, we would have to say. But it's the result of their own hardness of heart. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13 is the same parable, but in Matthew. Matthew chapter 13, verse 15 says, "For the people's heart has become callous. They hardly hear with their ears. They have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them." So here in the first part of that verse, "For the people's heart has become callous." And we'll be flipping back and forth from Matthew to Mark. So you might want to mark there in Matthew. The soul represents those with hard hearts that are manipulated by Satan to resist the truth of the gospel. How do we apply this part of the parable to us today? Well, do you know someone with this type of heart? Someone who completely rejects any type of spiritual information? Well, yes, we do. We know people who have hardened their hearts to the truth of the gospel, to the truth of Jesus Christ. Some reject because they love evil. No other way to say it. They love evil more than they love righteousness and holiness. Some reject because they don't care, have any concern about being praised by God. They would prefer to get the honor from men for doing whatever it is they're doing than turn and change and be honored by God. They have no concern for the praise of God. Satan easily takes advantage of people to blind them through appealing doctrines like hedonism, which is pursuit of pleasure. People are attracted to that. Materialism, which is pursuit of the material rather than the spiritual. And things like evolution. And even nowadays, one thing that's really big with people is environmentalism. people have believed that they can take, mankind can take care of our problems through all of these type of movements. Well, it's not true. But people who believe that have no interest in any truth that the gospel can teach them. And they are like this person that's described in this parable along the path. This soil represents those that have no interest, none, in anything spiritual. This type of people, for us who are spiritual, it's really hard to understand. It's hard for us to understand how somebody has no interest in anything that's good, anything that's right, anything that's holy. They're so different from us. They're really even like maybe a curiosity. We're like, how can this be? How can your brain work that way? We may feel sorry for that person. We may wish we could convince them otherwise. We can pray for them, but we really can't change them. They may even be angry towards anything spiritual and anything righteous and reject anything that comes from the Bible. That's the person that's described by this first example and by the person on the path. Now, the next person we're going to look at is in Mark chapter 4, verse 16. The next type of soil is the rocky ground. Others, like seed sown on rocky places, hear the word and at once receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. People on the rocky soil, yours may say stony soil. Jesus says these are the ones that hear and receive it with gladness. This is the kind of person we're looking for, right? We love it when somebody shows any interest in spiritual things that we can talk to. We can teach them the gospel. We want them to learn about the saving grace found in Jesus. Yet with no root, this type of soul, this person, they don't endure, which is crushing for us. If someone we have spent time with, we've taught them the gospel, now they've rejected it, it could be very disappointing and discouraging for us. We think we have found a soldier for the Lord, only to realize we have not. We've been let down. This person stumbles when faced with tribulation or persecution or temptation because they're not ready for those challenges yet. The world does not want to let them go. They don't want to release them to the saving grace found in Jesus. And they get dragged back into their old way of life. This soul represents those who believe and obey but do not last very long, quickly fall away. Well, how can we apply this to today? Well, many hear the word and receive it with great joy. They're quick to obey, and we're excited about that, but their faith is shallow. Their joy is based on emotionalism rather than knowledge. They are not grounded in the truth, of course, because they're new. They're not ready for the things that will come their way. They may say things like, you know, now that I'm saved, why am I still having all these problems in my life? You may have heard somebody say something like that. Well, it takes time for problems to be worked through when someone first becomes a Christian. Your problems in your life didn't go away immediately just because of that. But when these problems arise, there's no endurance, and they stumble. This soul represents Christians ruled by emotion rather than the Word of God, which is common to a new convert, and this really should be expected. That's why when we do have a new convert, we should work tirelessly to help them face the challenges that they will be facing. We may wonder why, when they fall away, what we did wrong in their conversion. What did we do? Could there be something we could have done differently to help them? Did I let their emotions take over and let them become baptized too soon? Maybe, we might think. Well, I'm not saying we should push baptism the first time we studied the Bible with someone, but there are many examples in the Bible of people obeying the gospel on the very first time they're exposed to it. Pentecost. Thousands of people obeyed the gospel. About the Ethiopian treasure, Cornelius and his family. There are others. The first time they were exposed to the gospel, they were baptized. We cannot control how people respond to the call of the world or the call of the gospel. But we can't stop people from returning to the world. We must teach the gospel, let it find the good hearts, and not feel responsible when someone falls away. Jesus tells us with this parable that this is a reality. It's just something that is the way it is. That's the way people are. And so we need to expect it and not be surprised by it. But the third soil in the parable is the thorny ground. Verses 18 and 19 is the explanation. Mark 4, verses 18 and 19. Still others, like seeds sown among thorns, hear the word. But the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desires for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. So, the thorny ground. Jesus says they hear the word, but their ability to bear fruit is choked by things in the world, by the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches. You know, we never read anything about the deceitfulness of poverty in the Bible. Because poverty is it's a teacher. Poverty teaches us. And it teaches us you can't depend on it. It can't help you. But riches, on the other hand, deceives us because we think we can depend on those riches to help us and provide for us. Well, and also, the ability to bear fruit is choked out by the desires for other things, the pleasures in life. Let's look over at Mark chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, verse 14. Here's Luke's explanation. The seed that fell among thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. They're choked by the pleasures of life, and because of that, they do not mature and become the person, the Christian they're supposed to be. This soil represents those who believe and obey, but then stagnate. They don't become fruit-bearing for the Lord. Their service to God is limited. Well, how do we apply this today? Now, unfortunately, many Christians today never mature. They never take their place as they should in the congregations of the Lord throughout the world. They may attend services, they may even participate. But yet, spiritually, they are not mature. They remain babes. They really are not fully bought in to the sacrificing lifestyle that a Christian is supposed to have, giving up things for things that are better and more important. A life that should be defined by service to God and to our fellow Christians is how we are supposed to be one day as a Christian. Some may even describe these as being lukewarm Christians, involved, but certainly not dedicated. Their spiritual growth is inhibited by the cares and anxieties that distract their minds. We studied a few weeks ago in our Sunday Bible class about the worries of life, worrying in life. And certainly that is one thing that keeps people from becoming productive in the Lord's kingdom. By riches, also deceived. Let's look over at 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. If you are rich in material things, we're told what we should be doing. Working, sharing, helping. Those kind of things. Don't let those things keep you, though, from your service to the Lord. Use those in your service. We can all fall into this category from time to time, honestly. But we can also renew our efforts and throw off these type of things, the worldly things that keeps us from our service to God. We can renew our efforts to be faithful. This soil represents Christians rendered fruitless by materialism and life issues, which we all face. These three types of people we've talked about are a reality. This parable is teaching us about people we meet every day. The people we come in contact with fit into these categories. This parable is preparing us for our daily walk in trying to teach the gospel. The people you meet will fall into one of the categories of this parable. And hopefully, some of the people you meet will fall into the fourth category in this parable, the people on the good ground, the people that's described as the good ground. In Mark chapter 4, verse 20, the explanation, others, like seed sown on good soil, hear the word, accept it, and produce a crop 30, 60, or even 100 times what was sown. Jesus says these people hear it and accept it, and they bear fruit different at varying levels. In Matthew, let's turn over to his version of the parable, Matthew chapter 13, verse 23. But the one who received the seed that fell on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. Here he says, you hear it and you understand it, which means you understand what you're supposed to do. Luke says that they hear the word with a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with patience. So understanding and having a good heart is descriptive of the person as described as the good soul. This soul represents those with a good heart who understand and obey the word of God. In case you haven't picked up on it already, this is where we want to be. This is how we want to be described. And we may be able to be described this way, but sometimes we may fall back into some of the other categories when we resist the truth of the gospel in some way. We need to go about our lives serving God and serving each other. We need to go about bearing fruit, as explained in this parable. Well, how do we apply this today? Well, many Christians who have this noble and good heart, they make the effort to understand, they make the effort to produce fruit, they work in service to the Lord. Maybe they're like it's described as the Bereans, where they receive the word with all readiness, is how we should want to be described. And they search the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. Let's look at Colossians chapter 1 and notice the importance of the of the understanding and the bearing fruit. Colossians chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. The faith and love that spring from the hope that is stored up for you in heaven, and that you have already heard about it in the word of truth, the gospel that has come to you. All over the world, the gospel is bearing fruit and growing, just as it has been doing among you since the day you heard it and understood God's grace and all its truth. Hearing and understanding must happen before you can bear fruit for the Lord. You have to be directed in the right way. We have to be directed in the right way. When we understand, we'll be more likely to bear fruit. We'll understand our instructions to us. Jesus said that not all will bear the same amount of fruit. That's a comforting thought to me, and hopefully to you too. Some 30-fold, he says, some 60, some 100. Some may be more skilled, some may have more ability, some may be more effective than others. But no matter, we are responsible for bearing fruit at the level that we can. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 10 and 11. Each one should use whatever gifts he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and power in ever and ever. Whatever our ability, we should exercise it to the fullest. This soul, the good soul, represents Christians who are faithful and fruitful in their service. And we should be producing fruit at our level. And the hundredfold people, those among us that are hundredfold people, don't look down on the ones of us that are not. We all are needed in God's kingdom. We all need to be working for the goal so that we can all serve God properly. We've got just a couple of minutes left. And so what I want to do in the remainder is I've got a couple of rules for interpreting parables I want to just go over right quick. I'll just read through these quickly. Hopefully this lesson of the parable of the soils has been helpful to you. But any parable that you come across in the Bible, I've got four rules here that I would like for us to consider to use these in interpreting any interpreting parables, especially these story parables. Because story parables sometimes have a lot of information, and not all that information is irrelevant. All right, rule number one, find out the central truth which the parable sets forth, which is sometimes difficult. Then all other parts of the parable are to be understood with the central with this as the central truth. I have marked this up, and so I can't even read my own writing. All the parts of the parable to be understood with the central truth as the guiding force for the remaining parts of the parable. In other words, get the main point, and then let everything else be governed by that. Don't get distracted. All parts of a parable. Well, that's rule number three. Never mind. Rule number two. Understand the parable in the light of the circumstances of its origin. Which means to understand the parable of the sower, which we talked about today, or soils, you must understand something about sowing seeds. If you don't understand what the parable is talking about in the original, then that's where you need to start. For example, there's a parable that has to do with a sheepfold in the Bible. If you don't know what a sheepfold is, you're lost. You've got to figure that out first. All right, that's rule number two. Understand the original story. Rule number three. In a parable, each detail is not necessarily significant, but details are given to add interest or color to the story, to complete the story. It wouldn't be a story if all these details weren't there. Now, my English teacher also told me about an allegory. In an allegory, everything, every detail is important. Everything in the story means something. And that is one in Galatians chapter 4. All right, rule number four. Never. I know you should never say never. Never interpret figurative language such that it contradicts plain scripture. If you have a parable, which is figurative language by definition, and you think it means something that the Bible clearly teaches over here, it doesn't mean that, then don't try to make it mean that. It can't mean that. That's rule number four. Thank you for your attention. We'll have our closing prayer.